F1A. Number 9B.
The next one is Malachi. And in the Old Testament, he's the last one because it's the last of the minor prophets. Malachi means the messenger of Yahweh, or my messenger, or my angel. It shows that Malachi has a great mission to bring to Israel, and that message was that Israel should behave like a good priest and not like a bad priest serving in the temple. Again, we have the temple as a central figure, but now it is how to serve in the temple. That's naturally a Christianity sense, the serving. It gives, so to say, the true sense of church service, how to serve the divine principle. And he has something to say against Israel. He was watching Israel after Haggai and Zechariah, that after a while he could see that Israel was turning the divine worship and the divine service into a materialistic, dogmatic, ritualistic worship, and he's all against that. He said his rebuke to Israel is that they serve God by bringing really false offerings, that the offerings they bring are not really free will offerings. You remember perhaps that when Moses was coming out of Egypt and wandering through the wilderness and through the desert, that on that way he began to give instruction to build the tabernacle. The tabernacle was the forerunner of the temple in Jerusalem, and therefore was symbolizing the very same thing, namely a symbol for the divine principle. But when he built that, when he asked the people to build that tabernacle, I speak of Moses, build that tabernacle, he said it must be a free will offering. Everyone must bring that, what he has, so as to build that tabernacle. He has to bring what he has in precious things, in precious stones, in silver and gold. He has to bring the best he has in order to establish the tabernacle, build the tabernacle. It's a free will offering. And that is naturally a symbol that we can only serve the divine principle when we bring in the best we have, and not the lamest we have and the worst we have. That therefore our offerings must be of the highest quality possible. Malachi saw that the people didn't do that, that they were they were treacherous towards God. Namely, they brought polluted bread, the bread they couldn't eat anymore and couldn't give anymore to the animals. They brought that bread and offered it to the Lord. They brought the blind and the lame and the sick animals and offered it to the Lord. Those that they couldn't eat anymore, which they would have had to bury anyway somewhere in the earth, that they brought and offered it on the altar as a sacrifice. Or, so he said, well, the people deal treacherously and in a dishonest way and are disloyal and unfaithful to the Lord. So we can hear the attitude towards the divine principle, saying, bring your best into the temple. Give your best quality. your energy, your devotion, your love, your efforts, your time, everything, the best you have, you must bring as a free will offering, or else you cannot serve in the temple, and the temple will lay waste very soon. So he ends up with that well-known passage that most people know, that he said, therefore, bring ye the whole tithe into the storehouse, and prove me therewith, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out the blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. So that is the pinnacle of his message. He said, don't bring the lame thing, the lame ducks. Don't be half-hearted. Don't be lukewarm in your study and in your devotion to this science. You know, in every field of activity, if somebody wants to be successful and really get somewhere, he has to do that. He has to put everything into it. He has to put his time, his effort, his love, his engagement, everything he has to put into it. And if possible, add a little bit extra to it. Just another extra than others. And then that little extra may just do it. And this is true in spiritual science the same way. A physicist, he can only do something he's really devoted to his subject. And so is a biologist, and so is everyone, and so is a spiritual scientist. He must really put everything into it, and then when he has put everything into it, he must put something more into it, a little extra also. And that is the true priest. That's the true priest. And so we learn to know something about how we can serve the idea, which means that we have to let go of all the lukewarm stuff. You see, even in Revelation, John the Revelator told us, said, I wish you were either hot or cold, but not lukewarm. And it's good to be hot, and it's nearly, or if not warm, not hot, then cold. Because if one is really cold, then we will find somewhere that we are in a come to an end, and see that that doesn't lead any further, and then we are willing somehow to sit down and say, now what did go wrong? But as long as one is lukewarm, things just go on and on. They are neither good nor bad. They are nothing, and we spend all our life just lukewarm, and nothing really happened. Neither good nor bad. And it's better that something really bad happens, because that can wake us up. So here too, he is asking us really to be a true priest. And bring therefore the whole tithe, and not just a superficial tithe into the storehouse. And then he can say, and then you can prove me. Then you can say, now I'm going to prove God. Now I have to give the proof, says the Lord, to you. And I will open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. That's always true, that then we have the superabundance of being. Just as we had it right on the second page in the textbook, where it says that life is pouring down more than what we are able to receive. So why ask for more? Being is always the redundancy principle. It always gives more than what we need. It does not give us just what we need, just right about what we need, nicely tailored to what we need. No, it gives us just 10 clothes when we need one. It gives us superabundance, and that's the nature of being everywhere. Also in natural nature, there is always superabundance. a tree always has thousands of seeds, and only once in a few years one seed is growing and becomes another tree, and all the rest don't matter, but that one matters. And that's the way how being works. It always gives the superabundance, knowing that one seed will grow up, and that is what matters. If we see that, and we get really from the storehouse all the blessing, then we really can say, then I am a scientist. And Daniel was a scientist. We come to Daniel. And Daniel is naturally a terrific prophet. He must have been one of the last prophets. One never really knows when all these prophets were prophesying. From some, one knows rather precisely. Precisely means in which century at least they were prophesying. But there are others where one doesn't know where they prophesy, in the 8th century before Christ or in the 3rd century before Christ. But Daniel was one of the last, because he tells us not only of Babylon, but also of the time when the Medes and the Persians came into Babylon, conquered Babylon, and therefore was telling about that time in the 4th and 3rd century before Christ. Daniel, in our matrix, is science as science. Science in the vertical, the operation of the idea in principle. He constantly shows that when he puts everything into principle, that it always worked. That in every situation, whatever the situation was, either in the lion's den or on top of the government of the Persians, he always could make it. He always could make it. And he, why could he make it? Because he understood, that's the horizontal, because he understood that principle. So he presents, like Zechariah, his prophecy in the four, in the word order, Christ order, Christianity order, science order, and gives there a sense that he says, I prove now as a scientist what Zechariah has taught. Zechariah had a vision, and he was prophesying. His vision hadn't anything to do with actual historical happenings. He just saw the vision. And Daniel came and took that and said, all right, I'm going to be that scientist. I'm going to be that science. And so Daniel is at once introduced in the word order as the one who has understanding. Of him it is said that he was more skillful in all wisdom, and that he was cunning in knowledge and understanding science. I think it's one of the few references, if not the only reference in the Bible, where the word science is used. And actually it depends also on the translation. It's not every translation put it that way. But it gives a good indication of his caliber, that he was a scientist, that he had the knowledge of a scientist, and that his understanding was 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were at the court of Nebuchadnezzar. So he is introduced as a man of understanding, of science. With that understanding, he shows then in the second part, in the Christ order, he shows that with that understanding, he was enabled to interpret all things. That he was able to interpret the dream of Nebuchadnezzar, that whereas the others, astrologer, magician, couldn't interpret it, and that interpretation changed the king's word and the king's heart. So you can see First, it is present to Daniel as the one who has understanding. Second, what does he do with that understanding? With that understanding, he could read everything. He had that marvelous faculty of divine mind reading, of divine mind interpretation. And so he could interpret things that were not known. He could interpret the unconscious mentality, the dreams, and explain what it meant. Then there is a third part in it where he begins to handle, then show how he could handle the calculus of mortality. He could read the signs on the wall, the writing on the wall, and could read that the idea would bring really the kingdom of Babylon to fall, and that Babylon will be overthrown by the Persians. And so it happened. So he was handling the Babylonic belief. Babylon was always standing for the calculus of mortality. Babylon was always anathema for the Israelites. That was the worst that was happening. Babylon and Assyria, but mostly Nineveh and Babylon, that was anathema. That was the whoredom of Babylon. That was the false calculus of materiality, of luxurious living, and so on. And so he foretold the fall of the false calculus and the rising of the true calculus. Because with the Persians, naturally a higher religion came into Babylon. The Persian had a very high religion, mostly molded by Zarathustra. And the kings of Persia were those who acknowledged then really Daniel. And so that Daniel was able to convince King Darius that he sent out a message to all the kingdoms that were under him that the God of Israel should be the God to be acknowledged, and that one should leave Israel free to worship their God. And then there is a fourth part, which is rather a lengthy part, and one doesn't quite always read that part, because in it there are not such nice little Sunday school stories like the writing on the wall and Daniel in the lion's den and so on. But there he shows really what Mrs. Eddy also was showing in the sixth chapter on Christian Science, namely that he could dissolve in his consciousness the false concept of theology, medicine, and material science. And he showed it in his vision that he could do it on which basis? On the basis of what he called the Ancient of Days. That the Ancient of Days came. The Ancient of Days is an expression that is biblical. We would say he began to see that there is only one infinite being, that which is from everlasting to everlasting. And that on that basis he would see the signs of spirit, which would be that which would resolve really the whole science of medicine, of theology, and of natural science. A terrific scientist. He really embodied, so to say, science itself. Or you could say he was a divine scientist. And that is the end of the whole prophetic age. And we can see that there is running through that Christ matrix a terrific big story. A terrific big story which would, so to say, tell us that right from the word go in Hosea, namely saying, look here, you go out from God, and you go out from God that is only one God, one good, one law, and nothing else. And from that point, you can, in an ordered way, flow from one step to the next step, to the next step, to the next step, until finally you arrive at Daniel, where you see, I understand that one God, and with that understanding of that one God, that Ancient of Days, I can handle the whole counterfeit belief in science, medicine, and theology. Quite a terrific picture. And in that picture, we see nothing of Moses' laws. See, the Old Testament is, so to say, called by the Jewish theology the law and the prophets. Up to the prophets is the law, and is molded by the law of Moses. Then came the prophets. The prophets told something about the Christ idea. And in all those prophets, the Christ is not asking us to do anything except only one thing. Not like Moses, who said, thou shalt not, thou must not, thou shalt not. Only one thing, namely, return to the Lord. Go to the standpoint of God. If we look into it and read the prophets and say, now let's see what the prophets are asking of us, we always see that there is only one thing, bend your knees and return to the Lord. Meaning, you see, that he introduced already the idea of grace, that we live by grace. And Zechariah put it then straight and says, we live by grace and not by might and power, so that we get a completely different aspect than when we are thinking in the realm of metaphysics. And now you come back to what we were talking about in the first hour of this week, that we have to make the change from metaphysics to science. From metaphysics to science, science says, is the contemplation of the infinite one, including all ideas. Therefore, it is that what God himself contemplates and knows of himself, and God is of too pure an eye to behold evil. So that all that seems to be of the nature of evil is being seen as a misunderstanding of the human mind, and that it has no reality, that it disappears and is no more heard of. Let me just run quickly through that last column again to build it together. We had that last column of, which is really a science column, you can see it, that it is really a column of giving everything to science, giving everything to the one principle that interprets itself through laws and orders and rules and system and structure and categories and methods, so that we become a scientist in our consciousness. So Haggai says, look here, don't build up your own opinions. Don't build up your own wishes, your own desires. Don't go along your own longings. Build science. Build in your consciousness step by step, stone upon stone, in an ordered way. Build up your system, your structure, the temple. Then Zechariah comes and says, but actually, you must know how the temple looks like. I must give you a master plan of that structure. So he gives the master plan of the four orders and says, look here, everything depends on the seven and the four. He uses the symbol seven very often. He uses the symbol of four very often and says, look here, that's what you have to build. You have to build a structure that consists of the seven and the four, And as you begin to know how to arrange these orders, the seven, as a word order, and as a Christ order, and as Christianity order, and as the candlestick order of science, your thought advances and will be brought higher and higher and higher until finally it touches really science. But it touches science. He doesn't go further than that, than to just see that it touches science, that every bell in Israel will be holiness unto the Lord. But Malachi says, look here, you can't do that if your approach to it is not clear and honest and really pure. You can't serve that idea with a lukewarm mentality, with an impure mentality. You can't bring just lame ducks as a sacrifice, and a polluted bread as a sacrifice. You have to bring the best you have, the best duck, and the best animal, and the best bread you have been baking. That you have to give. Give your best. And if you give your best to it, then you become a Daniel. Then you become the scientist itself. Then what Zechariah has shown as a vision is then your own embodiment. And so Daniel was the embodiment of Zechariah's vision. And therefore he showed in the same way the fourfold operation of the seven synonymous term. The word order, the Christ order, Christianity order, science order. But he didn't show it as a vision, he showed it as living experience. Everything in it is life experience with him. And so he becomes the scientist. And if we can see that whole plan of the prophets, we can go along that line. And if we go along that line in an ordered way, we too, step by step, can become a Daniel. Where we can say, all right, if I go to the lion's den, I don't go by myself. I don't see why I should walk into a burning house. That is not really my job. But if I'm brought through the situation, in a very difficult situation, I will find my way out. I will find my way out. He came out of the lion's den. He came out of all the difficulties that were lingering around him constantly because of jealousy, naturally, of the court people, even from the jealousy of the kings and so on. He always got out. He always found a way out. He was a scientist. He solved every problem.